Welcome to the Black History Short Stories Podcast. I am your host, Amandre Johnson. Glad to have you here on Season 2. On this podcast, we discuss short stories from Black history with a person that has an invested interest in Black history. Here we think it is important to carry on the stories of our past and, most important of all, continue the legacies and memories that are important to our future. Here today, we have Chastity. Please tell us your birth year and where you were born.
Okay, I was born in 1988, and I was born in Roanoke, Virginia.
Outstanding. And you are a repeat guest, so you've been on this podcast before, and you were on our reparations podcast, where we talked about reparations and the history and why and if Black people today need reparations, and that was one of my favorite ones. So yes, we're glad to have you back.
Thank you. Happy to be involved again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Today, we're going to talk about, we're going to continue to say, per se, our female Black inventors series. And today, we're going to talk about Mary Beatrice Davidson Kenner. And she's a Black female inventor who was super important. She was born May 17th. 1912 in Monroe, North Carolina. And from an early age, she showed an interest in inventions. And that's how the story goes. One particular story talks about how her mother would leave for work early in the morning. And when she would go out, she would go out the back door. The back door was super squeaky. And she's quoted saying, going to her mother one day, saying, "Mom, don't you think someone could invent a self-oiling door hinge?" At that time, she was six. So at age six, she's thinking about how to invent things and how to improve on things that don't work or don't work well, because that squeaky door used to wake her up at night and she wanted to know what could she do. So yeah, I think this shows that she's a naturally born inventor.
And curious and pays attention.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as most kids do, you know, I taught second grade, and I know that kids are very curious, and I know kids wonder a lot, but there's a separation between the kids that wonder a lot and the kids that actually want to know how to fix or improve on things. You know, I have kids that wonder how things work, but not so many kids wonder how things can work better.
Yeah.
And what they can do about
it. Like finding solutions.
Right, yeah. Right. So she is still quoted saying that she would hurt her hands trying to make something to fix that squeaky door that would wake her up in the middle of the night, but she never quite got it. And so she dropped it, but she never forgot it. She never forgot that, you know, she still wanted to fix this problem. She still wanted to find a solution. She still wanted to invent something to help, you know, herself in everyday life, to help her mom in everyday life, to help her family in everyday life. So she was a born inventor. Throughout her childhood, she would end up drawing ideas. She came up with a couple ones that were noted in the articles that I read about. A couple of specific ones that stuck out to me, really. She noticed water dripping off of a closed umbrella onto the door, because, you know, when you bring your umbrella in from the rain, I guess at that time they were leaning up against the door. Yeah. And she noticed it dripping. So she thought of an invention that would have an umbrella with a sponge tip.
Okay.
So the sponge catch the water. Would soak up all the water. Okay. And, you know, that's something that I would never even consider. I never thought about that. I thought you just had to take that L with the water on the floor.
You just got to deal with the water. So this is letting us know she thinks critically. She thinks her mind is, you know, like I said, trying to find solutions to things.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that takes, you know, a different type of mind, especially at an early age, to see a problem. And, you know, a lot of people, even adults, see a problem and their first instinct is to complain about a problem.
Yeah.
And one of her first instincts is to not complain, but how can I fix this
how
problem?
How can I make this better?
Right. Okay. And that's super cool. That's super great of her. Another invention she came up with was called a portable ashtray that would attach to a cigarette carton. And I thought that was super amazing because as a child, that's not something that you would use or something that you would be involved with. But, you know, at some point, maybe she noticed that someone was putting ashes on the floor or putting ashes on the ground. And she said, I can do better than that.
Yeah. And I thought she pays attention to everything.
As all children do.
You're right.
All children do. I noticed that as I teach, like, you know, even when kids aren't looking at you or they aren't talking to you, they're paying attention, they're listening, and they're soaking it up, and they're observing everything around them. And but for her to notice that this was something that could be fixed or something that could be better, because at some point she had to notice somebody using an ashtray and somebody didn't.
Yeah.
She was like, well, maybe everybody needs to use the ashtray all the time.
Okay. And have one available to them
at all times. Yeah. You know, and that's super great for her age. Absolutely. In 1924, when Kendall was 12, her family moved to Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. was where the United States Patent and Trademark Office was. So she would consistently go in there and look over all the patents that people had had to see if anyone had beat her to any ideas that she had thought of.
That's amazing.
I agree.
So she knew she knew that her ideas were good, and that she wanted to take them further than just in her mind. She knew she wanted to actually do something with them. Because who was going to the patent office?
Absolutely.
I wouldn't think to do that.
No, I wouldn't either. You know, one of the things that we're able to do, as you know, in this day and age, is we come up with what we think is a new idea.
Yeah.
We're able to pick up our phone to go to Google and see if that's already a thing. And you know, she has to do this physically. She has to be there to do this. But the ambition to do that.
Yeah, and she invested her time.
Absolutely. Because she wanted to know, like, well, what this finds out is, you know, I would like to, if I was able to one day to, you know, have been able to talk to her, is to wonder, did she feel defeated or did she feel happy?
Yeah.
Because if she came up with an idea and it was already patented,
she knows it was a good idea.
Exactly. You know, there could be that moment where it's like, oh man, somebody already thought of that. Or it could be that moment to where you say, I had a really good idea that somebody, you know, thought of before, which means it was a good idea, which means I'm on the right path, which means I am thinking critically.
Yeah.
And I hope she thought that way.
I hope so too.
Rather than, you know, somebody's defeated. Right. Because she definitely wasn't defeated. You know, and at her age, you know, other children are drawing fancy airplanes or drawing sport cars. She was drawing out more thoughtful things that would help people in everyday life. In one of the articles I read, it talks about a plan that she drew up for a convertible roof that would go over the folding rumble seat of a car. And this is the back seat where passengers were usually exposed to the elements. So,
okay, because when you're driving, you have a windshield to protect you, but the people in the back don't.
Exactly.
Okay.
So she was thinking of a convertible type cover that would be able to flip over the car or retract, you know, when it's a bad day, to keep from getting wet. And I imagine at some point she was one of those people at the back.
Yeah. So she was like, okay, wait a minute now. We can do better.
Right. As it began to rehearsal, she says, this isn't fun for me. I know this isn't fun for everybody. This ingenuity, this ambition, this critical thinking that we talked about, this wasn't, you know, anything new in her family. This ingenuity was in her blood. Her grandfather had invented a tricolor light signal to guide trains. Her sister, who was named Mildred Davidson Austin Smith, grew up to patent her own family board game, and she sold that commercially. Her father, who was a preacher named Sidney Nathaniel Davidson, even made a goal of transforming the family hobby into a full-time career. Around 1914, he patented a clothes presser that would fit in a suitcase and press trousers. Today we call them pants.
Yeah.
Press trousers while a traveler was en route to his destination. So this inventing was in her blood.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, well, we could say fortunately, her father's presser had an offer. A New York company offered him about $20,000 to buy that patent from him. Sheesh. I know. Instead,
1914. What year was it?
1914. Yes.
Oh, that's a lot of money.
Oh yeah. I didn't look up the equivalent of what it would be today, but I imagine $20,000 is that's a ton of money at the time in 1914.
Yeah.
But they offered him that. Instead, he turned it down.
Okay.
He bet on himself. He wanted to sell it himself. You know, it's super admirable. But the result was actually a failure. He produced only a single presser, which he sold for the sum of $14. So.
Yeah. I mean, I get it, though. He was like, I can do better. And it just didn't work out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you trust yourself and you bet on yourself, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's super admirable. But he missed out on that $20,000. So, which is unfortunate.
I just want to jump in and say that $20,000 from 1914 would be about $498,202 today.
He should have took that
deal. Yeah.
He should have took that deal. But that's okay. You live and you learn.
Yeah.
So back to Kenner. She ended up graduating through high school. Immediately after high school, she enrolled in an HBCU, Historically Black College University, Howard University, that is in Washington, D.C. Shout out to the Bisons, but ended up dropping out when she wasn't able to afford tuition. Probably because dad didn't take $20,000.
She might have been okay. But you know what? That's okay.
That is okay. So when she dropped out, she took some odd jobs. She became a federal employee during World War II. Ultimately, she ended up becoming a professional florist. But all in during this time and during these odd jobs, she continued to create. She never stopped inventing. And during this time, she knew what she wanted to do. She knew she wanted to be an inventor. She knew she had great ideas. She's still consistently visiting the patent office. So her jobs were mainly for saving money. Because
you mean she was mainly working to save money?
Saving money, because at that time, you know, patents cost money. Well, still today, patents cost money. Today, you know, a basic utility patent could cost, you know, several hundred dollars. And by 1957, Kenner had saved enough to file her first patent. And it was an elastic belt that held sanitary napkins in place. Now, to a lot of our listeners, you know, as including me, I don't know the male to female ratio of our listeners. It's a little off. That data is a little off. But sanitary napkins, to me, when I first read it, and I read an article, sounded like, you know, maybe napkins that are in clothes, untouched.
Yeah.
And then I did further research, and I kept reading. So sanitary napkins are what women use for their menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they used to call them. They weren't always called what they call today, tampons. And
well, that would be the equivalent of a pad.
Okay, equivalent of a maxi pad. Yes. Is maxi pad a brand or is that the name of the product?
A maxi, okay, it could be. It could refer to, I don't know how deep you want to get into this, but the maxi could refer to the absorbency. It could also be a brand.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I know nothing of this.
I think when you say MaxiPad, you're referring to an actual brand, but there's actual levels of absorbency.
So can we just say pad?
I said pad. Said MaxiPad.
My bad. I know.
Yes, but yes, just and you know, just for clarification, sanitary napkins are what they used to call them. Today we call them pads.
Okay. All right.
At least that's what I call them. The women in my life.
Okay, that's fine because I don't call them anything because I don't use them.
Yes.
But this is super important because, you know, this is kind of revolutionary at the time.
Oh, yeah.
She's a pioneer because at this time she made this elastic belt. So we'll post this on our Black History Twitter, the picture of the elastic belt. But what you can imagine, I'll try my best to describe it because when I looked at the picture to understand, exactly what she had invented. There's a belt that goes around your waist, okay? And there's kind of an adjustable strap that goes in between your thighs and back all the way around to the back.
Okay.
And in this adjustable strap, you can tighten it and loosen it as it may be.
Okay.
And you would put the sanitary napkin in the place to where was most comfortable for the woman to her menstrual cycle time.
Yeah, to absorb, to hold it in place.
Yes, to hold it in place and to absorb everything that comes out. And
yeah,
I will not describe a menstrual cycle for our listeners. That's something that you're going to have to do on your own.
Yeah, I think, and I don't know how deep you get into this, but in doing my own research, I realized that a lot of this was a big deal because this was before, and you haven't mentioned this yet, but this is before we have what we have today.
Yes.
So this was, you know, this was revolutionary because it assisted women in doing everyday things.
So, yes. So, to describe what she's talking about is adhesive pads,
yes,
things that stick in between your legs. And, you know, I know
stick to your underwear.
Good. I'm glad you said that, because I was going to say that our male listeners may not be as familiar with
how it works.
How it works. Yeah. I know I'm not. I know I'm able to say that I'm mature enough to know that I'm not 100% sure what goes down.
It was a big deal.
Absolutely. So I know before this, there was, you know, still sanitary napkins, but there was nothing really to keep them in place.
No.
In my master's class today, they would take trips to, you know, the professor talks about taking a trip to Mali, Africa,
okay,
and help them use sanitary napkins.
Mm-hmm.
And they would use cloth and sticks.
Yeah, prior it has to be uncomfortable.
I can't imagine.
And I can't imagine sticks doing what it needs to do down there. Sticks aren't absorbent.
I don't know anything that goes on about that, so I'm going to trust your word on that. But adhesive pads had not been invented yet. But, you know, this is 1957 where she saved enough money to file her patent. And as early as 1888, there had been wood pulp bandages.
Yeah.
And we say bandages as more of an absorbent shape.
Okay.
Like it was a material that would absorb. Like the bandages were originally made for like war cuts.
I saw
and
that.
Whatnot.
And the nurses and the who were attending to the men who were wounded saw how it worked for them. And they're like, oh, you know,
right,
we can use this for our menstrual cycle.
And they applied it to that. And that was the original intent. There was one company who was interested in Kenner's idea. They thought it was a great idea and they looked into it. And I didn't read anything about the offer they made her, mm-hmm, because as soon as they found out she was a Black woman, they dropped it. She is quoted in Laura F. Jeffries' book titled Amazing American Inventors of the 20th Century saying, "One day I was contacted by a company that expressed an interest in marketing my idea. I was so jubilant. I saw houses, cars, and everything about to come my way. Sorry to say, when they found out I was Black, their interest dropped." And
that, now tell me this. How could her being Black affect their company? Honestly, if they really wanted to patent or work with her, then they didn't have to tell anyone that she was that a Black woman invented it. Nobody needed to know that. So really it was just racist.
Absolutely. That was going to be my response. It's racism.
It's just truly, oh gosh, no.
It's the opportunity for a Black woman to succeed. And they said, we can't have that.
But and you know what's crazy? On one hand, they're looking at it like, oh, no, we don't want this Black woman to succeed. On the other hand, they could have looked at it like, oh, we can help all these women in the world. But because it was a Black woman that came up with the idea, that canceled out everything.
Absolutely.
Sigh.
Oh, I mean, it's tragic. I mean, it's definitely not ideal. But nevertheless, it was a great idea. But as a result of discrimination and racism, the belt was not patented until 30 years after she introduced it.
30 years.
30 years.
So for 30 years, you know what? I'm not even.
For 30 years, it went unpatented. Now, what I do is I want to sit here and I want to talk about this for a second, because that 30 years that it wasn't patented, you know, when she introduced it in 30 years past, let us not think of this as a failure. Let this be a testament to how far ahead
she was
of her time.
Because it didn't come back around until 30 years later. I need to think about it like that.
You have to think about it is 30 years.
She was innovative.
And this is still a good idea.
Yeah.
After 30 years, let's put this in perspective of us. In 2007, the iPhone came out. It's 2020 now. We're on iPhone, 11. And think of the advancement that has been made. The iPhone in 2007 today would be trash. In 13 years, it would be absolute trash. Nobody would buy it. And 30 years after her invention, it's still wanted and still patented. Everybody wants it.
And in between that time, nobody had a better idea. Exactly. Or at least they didn't patent it, or it didn't come about.
Exactly.
So wait, so 1957 is when she tried to patent it?
Hold on, let me go back and I'm going through my notes.
Yeah, it says right there.
Yep, 1957, she said, yep, for her first patent, yes.
What's 30 years?
1987.
So my grandmother, my mother, and almost me, because I was born in 1988.
Yes, ma'am.
Had to come up with alternatives. I know there had to be something else that happened.
During this time.
I think the adhesive came about.
I'm not exactly sure the date that the adhesive pad came out. I looked it up, but I didn't write it down. So, okay. During this time, during her 30 years, when her sister, she continued to invent, she ultimately ended up filing 5 patents, which is more than any other Black woman in history. And her inventions were targeted toward making daily life easier, which all inventions should be geared toward, to, things that everyone does daily, making that as easy and as efficient as possible. It says here that we got the maxi pad, the adhesives, in 1969. I feel like that's still late.
That is.
That's 12 years after she came up with the belt. And I'm sure that the first one wasn't the best one. I'm sure that the product has changed in advance.
For sure. Because it literally just had one adhesive strip. They have wings and everything now.
Wow. Again, still ahead of her.
She was way ahead.
Way ahead. Oh, it's frustrating.
It's very frustrating.
Yes. But she continued to inventions. One of the things she invented for making daily life easier was her sister became sick with multiple sclerosis. And according to nationalmssociety.org, multiple sclerosis is a disease of the central nervous system, which is made up of the brain, spinal cord, and optic nerves. It is thought to be an immune mediated disorder in which the immune system incorrectly attacks healthy tissue in the central nervous system. The most common symptoms includes fatigue, numbness, tingling, blurred vision, double vision, weakness, poor coordination, balance, pain, depression, and problems with memory and concentration. Less common multiple sclerosis may cause tremor, paralysis, and blindness. So one of the things Kenner invented for her sister and patent is a serving tray and soft pocket that attached to her walker. Yes, she's also patented a toilet paper holder that made sure the loose end of the roll was always reachable, and a back washer that could be attached to the shower wall, which is something that I would appreciate today.
Right now.
That seems amazing.
She has... I just imagine her walking through life and, looking at stuff. Like, oh, I can think of something for that. or just automatically coming to her.
Absolutely.
Like just living her life, you know, I don't know, just seeing the world differently, I guess.
Absolutely. You know, we could, I mean, a lot of people see things in everyday life and see things to complain about. She thought she saw things in everyday life and saw things to improve upon, which is, you know, we need more of those people. You know, I'm one of those people. I can say for myself, I don't complain, but I also don't think to improve things. I take things how they are.
Yeah.
That's not my mindset to improve things, you know, in everyday life per se. I'm not an inventor. I'm not. That's not my mindset.
No, you're not an inventor, but I don't think you should say you don't think of how to improve things because you do.
I think of how to improve, not to invent things to improve, or how to improve how people think, I would say. Okay. As a teacher, yes. That's my job. Okay. I improve on how people can think.
And make better decisions.
And make better choices.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, that's a...
That's your lane.
Oh, yeah. That's my avenue. you know, one of the things I'll say often to everyone, from everyone ages kindergarten to adult, you know, make good choices.
Yeah.
You know, I've told that to 6-year-olds. I've told it to 50-year-olds. Make good choices. So, and it's my job to help them do that. Unfortunately, out of all these patents, Kenner never became rich from her inventions by any means. Her ideas were novel, and they centered on the accessibility and ease, which paved the way for more people to do the same. And although she never became rich or famous, she never based her success on money.
Yeah.
You know, she was proud of what she'd done and what she invented and the lane that she created, the thought process of to see normal everyday things and to make them more efficient. You know, she's quoted saying, anyone can become an inventor as long as they put their mind to it. Every person is born with a creative mind. Everyone has that ability.
I agree. And we can't say that she didn't become... Well, we can say she didn't become rich, but she certainly made a name for herself because we're talking about her right now. And anytime you look up something, you know, anytime I Googled the maxi pad or was looking doing research, her name came up.
Well, absolutely, because, you know, she was truly before her time with shows. And had it been anyone else, had she been another race, you know, she probably would have been a millionaire, if not more, which is, you know, which is unfortunate. It's terrible to say.
It's awful.
Absolutely.
Because the color of her skin prevented someone from making the lives of women everywhere better.
Absolutely.
Simply because of what she looked like.
They didn't hold her back. They held a whole generation of women back.
Yes.
Which is unbelievable that they would do because...
Yeah, because in my research and then thinking about it, I had never really thought about it like this. Like, women couldn't really do a lot of things outside of the house during that time of the month because leaks happened. You know, the things they were using weren't secure. Stuff that was available was expensive. Maybe they couldn't clean the rags that they had to use at that time. So, like, it really, when they had their menstrual cycles, it really, like, hindered what they were able to do. So this could have helped women come out of the home or do things, you know, just be more comfortable in life. And they didn't have that ability until 1969 to feel at least comfortable with it. I'm sure, I mean, people are innovative on their own. They come up with ways to, you know, work around things, but it could have been a lot easier if they had a belt.
Oh, absolutely. So one thing I did, you know, because this piqued my interest, is I Googled sanitary napkins. I wanted to see what it looked like. And, you know, women did seem like they did their best to make it as comfortable for them as they could. They often would use cloth that was, you know, rewashable. Mm-hmm. And they would also often use, you know, knit them themselves with their own designs. And like some of them had like really amazing designs and you could tell that they took a lot of time and a lot of effort into it. Some were, and you can tell that by the pictures and, you know, what I looked up, that it varied from woman to woman, like their preference.
Okay.
As far as size. So the thickness, the depth, the length, all varied from woman to woman. I think the very important thing that we need to recognize is, we talked about the comfort level, the elasticity of a belt. You imagine, you know, I believe that all of us listening to this have been to gym class.
Yeah.
Imagine the, you know, the elasticity of your gym shorts.
Okay.
You know, imagine if you didn't have that, how uncomfortable that would be. Mm-hmm. And the ability to hold the sanitary cloth in place was, you know, a major thing to women. That level of comfort, that level of security, I can imagine, although I have never experienced that, I know that my experience with my, you know, my shorts and my boxers, you know, being able to sit on my waist comfortably is a big deal to me, especially as an athlete that plays sports. You know, it's something that you don't think about until you don't have it. And I can't imagine not having that level of comfort.
Yeah, being able to move around freely and, you know, do what you need to do. You had explained that the belt was adjustable, so elastic around the waist and then adjustable between the legs.
It kind of had like buckles at the like buckles at the top of the straps, like in between the thigh.
Okay.
So you could pull the tie tighter to make it tighter to you.
Okay.
And I didn't read the patent on it, but from the photo, that's how it looked to work to me.
Okay. So yeah, I can see how that would have been beneficial to women.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. She was, you know, she, again, we can't stress enough how far ahead of her time she was, and, you know, how important she was to, you know, women to have, you know, to sit on a patent for 30 years.
Yeah.
To still get it patented. You would think in 30 years that someone could come up with something that would make this patent irrelevant, and they had.
No.
So I think
so. It was still a good idea 30 years later.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope that she, you know, knew that.
Do you think she used them for herself?
I would guess so.
See,
I would bet so.
I hope so. Like, I hope she could, you know, I don't know how expensive they were to make, but what if, you know, she made them for her friends and family and just let them use them?
I think that's very possible. I would think that, you know, any practical product that you come up with that helps improve on everyday life, you would need to, you know, have a group of people that would test it out and see if it, you know, because in your mind, it does make life easier. And you use it, it makes your life easier. But is it practical to everyone?
Yeah. A little group and to get feedback and how can I improve on it?
Exactly. So I would think she did that, and I would think all inventors do that. I didn't read any research that outlined that.
Yeah.
You know, and I've done for this series, for the Black Women Inventor series, you know, there, I haven't read any specific research about, you know, testing.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I will, maybe, because I'm going to continue to research. There's you know, there's a long list of Black women inventors, and my gosh, I'm so thankful them. Yeah, I don't want to give too much away on the podcast, but they have
a lot of good content.
They have invented things that I couldn't imagine living without today.
Okay.
I couldn't imagine. And it's amazing that they're not heard of more.
Yeah.
That's the amazing part. They're not heard of more, because when I looked up some of these names that I found and I saw what these women invented, I said, oh my gosh, how are they? Why are they not in my history books? Why do I not know them? Where are their statues? And where are their museums and classroom names? Like, they need buildings named after them. So, yeah, it's super important. You know, a little known fact, and this is not a female, but, you know, he didn't make the list, but a Black male inventor invented the traffic light.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah, like things that you use every day that you don't even think about where it came from.
That someone had to think of.
That it made everyday life better.
Yeah.
And
safer.
And so much safer. So much safer, you know.
Getting over you.
Yeah, well, there, South Carolina does not have a great track record of great drivers. Okay.
No. You need to do a podcast.
We'll see. We'll see. What we're going to do, before I forget, Ms. Kendra died in 2006. She died where her family ended up moving to in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And although she did not die a rich woman monetarily, she was rich in knowledge, rich in innovation, mm-hmm. rich in purpose.
Yes. And her name is out there for everyone to learn more about her. So we will honor Ms. Kenner and, hopefully this will help people learn more about her.
Absolutely. I hope this, interests you to wonder, like when you look at everyday things.
Yeah.
To wonder who invented that? Where did it come from? Why do I use this? How do I use this? What's the intent? Before we go to our break, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Think about, just everyday things, everybody on earth. We have listeners from many different countries, which I'm super excited about. I wish they would email me. Or
let us know who you are.
Please contact me if you're from, another country. If you're not from another country, we have listeners all across the nation.
Yeah.
Actually. So please email me. But everybody uses toilet paper. And there's a huge debate on whether you pull from under the roll or over the roll. Which do you do?
I never paid attention before. But I do over.
You do over?
Yes.
Okay. That's super important because I also do over, but some people do under and it really bothers me. And you never know what bothers you until you see the other side of it.
It's still toilet paper.
No. There's a certain way that it's supposed to go. It's invented a way to be used efficiently.
It's still efficient if it's under.
No, it's not.
You still get to use it.
Well, let me tell you
that
Scott Wheeler invented the toilet paper roll. And he invented it to be over. So you're supposed to pull from the top.
Well, Scott should have gave us directions.
He did. People just ignored them. So.
You make it work. And
you're making it work wrong. You're working backwards.
Do you still get the toilet paper on your hand and do what
slower,
you
I imagine.
You think so?
I don't know. I just know that's not the way it's meant to be.
I mean, in our house, it's over.
That's because we make sure if it's not over, I put it over.
Do you really?
I absolutely do.
Have I ever put it under?
You have.
You flipped it around.
I sure did.
It must have been in the, this is not about our household.
It is not.
Yeah.
We'll take a quick commercial break. You'll hear from my sponsors and we'll be right back with our favorite part of the podcast, our questions. Welcome back to Short Stories of Black History. We're here for our guest Chastity, and before we get forward on our questions, which are our favorite part of the podcast, I want to give a quick shout out to the Perlo Podcast Network, which this podcast is included in, to Perlo Podcast Top 10 List. And this most recent Top 10 List is Saturday Night Live Best Episodes. Now, I didn't grow up watching Saturday Night Live, but I know that it featured some of the funniest people that I love, including, one that sticks out to me is Will Ferrell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's probably not a Will Ferrell movie that I have not watched. So my top SNL sketch would be everyone that Will Ferrell's in. What about you?
I don't think I am well-versed enough on SNL sketches to say I have a favorite, or episodes to say I have a favorite.
Okay.
I like the impersonations.
Okay.
You know, when they have, when they mock the president and Sarah
Palin. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those are I like those.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they pick people that look so much like the person that they're pretending to be, which I guess is the point.
Uh-huh.
But they do a really good job with that.
I agree. Yeah. No doubt about that. And also Dr. Ty and the Colonel, whose most recent episode talks about alligators, pyramid schemes, elections, and no meat Wendy's.
That's a lot.
Oh, they cover a lot of current news, and those guys do an amazing job. And don't forget to listen to their live cast on the movie Tremors. with Kevin Bacon. And, you know, I don't think the movie Tremors, are you familiar with that movie?
I don't know if I've ever seen it. I just started. Is it a scary movie?
It's more suspenseful than scary.
Sounds scary to me. Are there monsters?
Yes.
Then I probably haven't watched it. I just started watching scary.
Well, shame on you, because Tremors is the classic that everybody needs
I'll
to see.
I'll have to watch it in the daytime.
And they've done the podcast. It's got Kevin Bacon, you know, and like 99% of the things that Kevin Bacon is in. Like, okay. He created Hollow Man. Hollow Man.
I don't know what that is.
The movie where he's invisible.
Okay.
Well, they did the science experiment. We're going to watch that tonight.
All right.
I'm not letting you get away with that. So we're on to our favorite part of the podcast, the questions. Okay. So what do you consider to be the greatest invention of your lifetime and why?
This social media.
Explain.
Just like Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, things like that. Those things have changed the way we do life.
Okay.
I always think like I don't need to have a class reunion because I know what everyone's doing already from Facebook.
Mm.
This is something that you and I like to do, and I don't know if anybody else does this, but we get on Snapchat and we can go anywhere in the world and see what other people are doing.
This is very true.
News, presidents, political figures, celebrities, like we have access to these people from our phones. Now, whether or not they respond is another thing, but we can literally get on our phone and go to someone's profile and send them a message. Mm-hmm. Like that has, it has just changed the way we do everything.
It's absolutely, you know what else has done? It's changed the way that you process information, because if I texted you a fact or something that I believe to be a fact, you know, you immediately go to Twitter to find out if it's true. Is Twitter talking about this? Because if Twitter's not talking about it, it can't be true.
It can't be true. Like last night, Chadwick
Boseman died.
The Black Panther. And I saw it and I was like, wait a minute. Let me fact check this. I went to Twitter and I Googled it and I saw legitimate sources reporting it and I knew that it was real.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the counter to that is you get that idea that you can check these social media places. Like you'll see people who take everything they see on Facebook is
true. Yes. I saw it on Facebook.
Well, yeah, you saw it on Facebook. Well,
you know, anybody can get on there. Yeah.
That must be true, you know?
Yeah, so it can be, I mean, it could be good and bad, but I think for the things that I use it for and how it is included in my life, for me to be able to share moments and experiences and see other people's, you know, highlights of their lives, it's been a good thing.
I agree. Social media has really changed around the world, and like you talk about, and if you've never done this, I invite you to do it with us. You know, every now and then, open up your Snapchat, go to the world, and just see what's going on in Norway. Just
pull your map down.
Yeah, what are they doing in Switzerland right now?
We go to Africa.
Oh yeah,
Alaska.
Oh yeah. And I have no idea. I don't speak another language. I have no idea what they're saying. But you know, I'm watching them and watching their experiences of life, and I'm learning about their culture and what they're doing in just everyday life. And, you know, everybody doesn't have the profile public, but for those people that do, that allow me to see this, it gives me an insight into what their life is like.
Yeah.
So, you know, for places that I've never been, you know, I've never been in places in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see on Snapchat is all I know about that place.
Yes.
And that's how I view that place. I remember, I think I was looking at Norway, and there were these two people hiking. There was a man and a woman hiking in Norway. And so when someone asked me about Norway, you know, I immediately went to that thought about those huge mountains, that landscape of vast nature. There was a little bit of snow on the ground and the rivers. And, you know, I watched their Snapchat, they snapped their day of hiking or whatever they did. And from now on, that's my thought of Norway. And that's what I think of it when I see it. So, you know, social media has given me that. Not an encyclopedia, not a history book, not an atlas. You know, Snapchat gave me that experience. So I think that's a very valuable, you know, thought, and I never considered that as a great invention, and it is. We talked about sanitary napkins, which, you know, ultimately affects one gender. It does. So should inventions that only affect women be made strictly by women? And when I say that, I'm talking about examples like the sanitary napkin or the bra.
Yeah.
You know, should it be made by women? Why? Or, you know, does it?
I don't think we should say, no, women should be the only ones inventing things that affect women. But I do believe that if someone is coming up with an idea that is specifically for women or people who have female parts, I think they should consult a woman.
Absolutely.
And like we said, like, you know, to test it on groups and to kind of see like, hey, I think this could help you in this situation. Could you try it out and see, you know, let me know what I can improve upon? Because if I'm going to be the person wearing it, I should also be the person to be able to give you insight on how to improve it or let you know if it's good or not.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the way I thought about this was very, you know, maybe I'm thinking about it rudely, but my first thought was, no, you know, a male should not be able to invent a product for a female exclusively because they have no experience with it.
Yeah.
You know, to me, and this could be a very wrong thought process, to me, it would be me coming to you and saying, hey, this is what you need. This will help you live better. Here you go.
No, I wouldn't take it like that.
Uh-huh.
I could take it as if you have women in your life,
uh-huh,
and you may not necessarily be able to physically experience what they experience, but you see how it affects them. Like, you've seen me hurt and cramping and, you know, in pain. So you know how it affects me.
Absolutely.
So I don't think it would be rude for you to say, here, do this. No, I would gladly, if you have a solution or something you think can make my life better or make me, you know, more comfortable, I would certainly accept it.
Okay.
I wouldn't take it as a bad thing.
Oh, well, then I changed my mind. Then I take that back.
Okay.
Yeah. Although I have no inventions to make your life better.
You don't know that yet.
Today, I don't.
Okay.
Tomorrow, I might think
we'll
of
give you more time.
Maybe I'll invent the magic pill that
cures
everything for women, I guess. Can you describe the importance of having more Black inventors?
Representation.
Okay.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Because if I see, there could be another Mary Kenner somewhere right now who sees things and like, oh, I want to make this better, and drawing things and, you know, drawing models and mock-ups of future inventions. And if she can see someone else out in the world who's inventing things, you know, she's like, you know, I really can do this. I can take this drawing that I made and make it into an actual product and help people. So more Black inventors could breed more Black inventors. Like, it could, you know, set the or pave the way for other people to make life better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. I think representation is huge. I think seeing people that look like you do things that, you know, you don't know that you can do is a huge, huge thing. It's one of the reasons that I'm a teacher myself, because, you know, I was asked this on a podcast, like, when was your first Black male teacher? And it really rattled me to think about, because, you know, I said my first one was probably probably in high school, and it was PE. And outside of PE, I don't know that I've ever had a Black male teacher.
Yeah, I've only ever had. And I just realized this. I thought I never had any, but I did. I did have male PE teachers. Mm-hmm. But in the classroom, I never had one.
So, which really gave me a crazy thought process. I was like, wow, I never had a Black male teacher. But my role models, you know, were my coaches, and they were teachers, which is why I'm teacher today. And, you know, my kids who, you know, were in second grade, you know, they're 8 years old, and they're going to be able to say that their first you know, black teacher, if I was their first black teacher, was in second grade.
Yeah.
You know, if I was their first male teacher, it was in second grade when they were 8 years old. So they're going to always have that with them when people ask. They're going to say, no, I've been there. I've had that. Like, you know, I've experienced that. And that's not something that everyone can say. And that's the representation that, you know, I know I'm speaking to me. I bring to, you know, the table, which, you know, I'm really proud of.
You should be.
So because it does. Representation matters.
Yeah,
it does. And, you know, I hope that they grow up to be, you know, better than teachers. I hope they grow up to be astronauts and presidents and, you know, government officials that
will make inventors.
Inventors that make huge change. But they've had that representation. So you've been on the podcast before. So I've asked you the question, which I ask everybody on the podcast, that regarding Black history, what do you consider to be the most significant event in your lifetime? But I want to adjust that question to ask you how the most significant event in your lifetime regarding Black history affected your life. So first you have to identify.
I don't know what the most significant event is.
You have to. Everyone has to have a significant event in Black history that affected their life.
Did I say when Barack Obama became president as my significant event?
I'm not sure because so many people say that and do not. And I said this before, it's not cliche, it's monumental.
Yeah.
So if that is your most significant event, don't discredit that by saying, oh, everybody says that.
Okay.
Everybody says it because it's important.
Okay,
it's,
that's my significant event. And that was the first time I was able to vote.
So that's how it affected your life.
Yes.
Being able to vote, you were able to
vote. It was important for me to vote because who I was voting for, the person looked like me. The person had family that looked like me. And not only that, it was an educated, well-qualified Black man. I think that made me look at life differently.
Okay.
It really, and I know it's like, oh, it made me believe I can do anything. No, I literally was like, okay, you know what? There are no limits to what I can do. I can become anything I want to become.
That makes sense.
So.
No, I definitely love that. I know 2008 was also my first opportunity to vote and to be able to do that. And have that representation as the president. You know, you looked at 43 other people that did not look like you.
Didn't understand you.
You know, and there's a good majority of them that, you know, were against you.
Yeah.
and promoted your oppression. Mm-hmm. To see that was, you know, was amazing. Yes. I can remember, you know, that same night. Got elected on a college campus, and I went to PWI, which is a predominantly white institution. For our listeners that don't know, there's predominantly white institutions. So there's HBCUs, historically Black colleges and universities. So if you go to a predominantly white institution, obviously there's majority white people. And I went to one in a very rural area in Virginia where they openly did not like Obama. I mean, billboards that literally said, Obama or America, you can't have both. Literally, the billboard next to, you know, a Walmart said that. So when I walked out of my dorm room after he won the election, I was excited. So, you know, I'm excited. I want to go to my other friends' dorm rooms. And the faces in those dorm rooms of others that did not look like me were troubling.
Okay. They were not happy.
They were not happy. I got kicked out of two rooms that night.
Did you really?
I did. I got kicked out of two rooms. And the first room was like, man, congratulations. Whatever, man. Get out. You know, and the other room I went to, I was like, did y'all see who
did
won?
Did you go to rub it in their faces? Or you were just genuinely
No, I'm
like-
excited. So I'm thinking that in my mind, everybody was excited.
Okay.
In my mind,
and you
like,
didn't get that same reaction.
No, in my mind, it was a, you know, it was time to turn up. You know, we won, we did this, and no, it wasn't as the turn up that I thought it was.
Sorry,
I mean it's okay.
I know, but that's sad to think about. You know, I remember I was in college as well, and I went to college in West Virginia, and I remember I'm not even going to get into that. But anyway, I actually drove home 2 hours to come vote. And I remember sitting in my sister's room and we were watching the results and, you know, just how happy mm-hmm. we were when we, and I remember everybody playing Jeezy song.
Oh, My President's Black?
Yes.
My Jeezy?
I think we listened to that song like 10 times.
As you should.
Yeah. Yeah. But definitely that was the most significant event. And it just really kind of, it also made me very aware of politics in America. Uh-huh. And since then, I've always, you know, paid attention. And I don't want to say been involved, but I always make it a point to vote in even local elections, not just the presidential elections, and really just to be informed. Because my thing back then was, if you were going to argue with me about Obama, I was going to have my facts, and I always did.
Okay.
So don't come for me with some nonsense about how he wasn't even an American or anything like that, because I had my facts right. Okay.
Yeah, that I didn't have that argument in college.
I did. I remember my sweet mate.
No, we didn't have that argument. It was like, don't even talk to me about it. there was one room I went into. I was like, did y'all see him before I could, you know, get the period of the exclamation point at the end of the sentence? Like, get out.
Why don't were they even. Mad?
It wasn't because they wanted to win. A lot of people around.
I don't even remember who he went. Was it? It wasn't.
Who he went against?
Who did? Yeah. Who was?
Nobody remembers losers. Nobody remembers who came in second place. So it's I don't even think it's worth mentioning. But yeah. So no, I think that is a good effect. So
it was Romney.
It was Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
Nobody remembers.
Wait, that was in 2012.
Doesn't matter.
It was John McCain.
See what I'm saying? Like, nobody remembers second place. Don't come and do it. Rule, moral of the story, don't lose. So, but I would thank you for joining us today. You've been amazing. I appreciate your time. If you would like, before we forget, I always forget this, the big facts of the podcast. Big facts of the podcast. So the big facts of the podcast today is that new patents are effective. We talked about patents with, you know, Ms. Kenner. She has the most patents of any Black woman in history. New patents are effective for 20 years. To extend the life of a patent, the inventor must pay maintenance fees to the United States Patent and Trademarks Office. There are three kinds of patents. There is a utility patent. It's for the invention of a new and useful process, machine, article of manufacture, or composition of matter. There's two design patents for the invention of a new, original, or ornamental design. And three, wonder if you knew this, there are plant patents.
Plant, like plants?
Anyone granted to anyone who invents or discovers and asexually reproduces any distinct and new variety of plant.
What?
Mm-hmm. That's pretty amazing, right?
Yes, it is. I'm stunned, actually.
Yeah, but. You know, just because you do all these three, utility, design, and plant patents, it also has to meet a criteria. In order to receive a patent, it has to meet three specific criteria. One, it has to be useful. What you are patenting has to serve a purpose to improve upon something that is already useful. Two, it has to be novelty. The invention cannot be known of or described in writing anywhere else prior to your application. And three, it has to be non-obvious. What you are patenting has to be significantly different from existing items. You know, for example, you couldn't patent a miniature version of an item that already exists.
Okay, so it has to be completely original. Not obviously.
Right. Like, you can't take the iron and make it smaller and say,
call it something else.
This is something new because it's an iron for socks or for baby clothes.
No, it's still
an iron. No, it's still an iron.
It's just a small iron.
It's just a small, it's just a miniature version.
Okay.
So, you know, you cannot do
that. That's good to know.
Yes. So, those are our big facts of the podcast. But we would like to thank you for joining us today. If you would like to reach out to us and give us ideas for the podcast, tell us ways we can improve, make a correction in the research, please feel free to email us at bhshortstories@gmail.com. That's B as in black, H as in histories, and short stories, plural. Please feel free to reach out to our Twitter, Short Stories of Black History Twitter. You can find us there. And if, again, if you are from another country, if you are from, you know, another state, please reach out to us. You know, we would love to know what you guys think of the podcast and what we can improve upon. Thank you for joining us. See you guys next week.